Former player agent, NHL GM, analyst, Brian Lawton joins us once again. Brian, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Recent broker of an NHL team. Let's just add that in there too, Jason, as a joke.
Well, did you start the ticket drive in Vegas?
No, I didn't. But I did sell, believe it or not, brokered the deal for Matt Holzhizer to buy Philip Falcone shares in Minnesota.
Really? How do you go about doing something like that?
You know what? I've been working with Matt for a number of years. We were trying to find an NHL team where he could become a majority owner. We just couldn't find anything that, you know, we really felt was a great deal. And I'd been friends with Philip Falcone for quite a while, and he called me one day in the summer, said he was thinking about potentially selling his shares, and I said, don't call anybody else, we'll buy them. And that's how it goes. And then I was the lead negotiator for our side. And, you know, it's a long process. It took a good 7.5 months, really, from that date.
Wow. Now, I don't know how much you would have known before this, but how has the background checks in the NHL changed after some of the owners, Boots, Baggio, and those other guys? How much more in depth is it now than maybe it was even a decade ago?
It's incredibly more in depth now than it was. You know, that's a big part of the process. And the reality is we really had the paperwork done about December 1st. So you're talking about 75 days of background checks and intense and questions on everything and anything from, you know, not only people's backgrounds with regard to, you know, any potential criminal history or things like that, but also just investments. You really have to turn your life over if you want to get involved with the National Hockey League and allow these people to sift through everything about you. And they're doing it right. You know, it's something that Gary and David Zimmerman in particular, who oversees that, take very seriously. They don't like what's happened in the past, and they're going to make sure it never happens again, and they're doing an excellent job.
Brian, we're looking at a lot of different things in the NHL. You know, we've got the race at the bottom. What did you make? Because I know you can't ask your coach and players to lose. I guess maybe you could ask your coach, but you definitely can't ask your players to lose. Buffalo and Arizona, you know, in Arizona's case, usually it was unrestricted free agents, but Yandel wasn't. They make moves clearly for the future. Same with Buffalo. But when the lottery is only a 20% chance, how risky of a proposition do you think that is for a manager to you know, put all their eggs in a basket, hoping that the ball comes out of the drum with their name on it?
Well, obviously, it's a lot more risky now than it used to be, Jason. We completely, you know, redid the deck as far as how much percentage chance the first team has this year versus in the past. A little bit strange this year because you've got two universally recognized players that, you know, really could garner number one status in any other year. So, you know, in theory, yes, 20%+ for the first pick, but, you know, you really just want to make sure you get one of the first two picks this year and be happy. So the odds are all over the place when you look at Edmonton and Arizona, the team that finishes obviously in second is in much better place than the team that finishes in third.
Everybody's watching on a daily basis Connor McDavid just light up the Ontario Hockey League, and you know, more and more all the time. I think it's obvious he's going to step into the National Hockey League. Do you see him having a Crosby-like entrance into the NHL?
I absolutely see that possibility, but you have to keep in mind that even after Sid's first year, I believe they picked Jordan Staal the year after.
Yep.
So you can do the math there as to how much of an impact even Sidney coming in and, you know, being a player that, you know, could not only contribute but really could lead from day one, not at the level he is today, but still, you know, when you have a franchise that's in that position, it wasn't an instantaneous turnaround. That's the bad news. The good news is, you know, they were able to build from that, and it was in conjunction with Jordan Staal, with Evgeny Malkin, with Marc-Andre Fleury, with Ryan Whitney, for that matter, that were all there. And when you mix in a Chris Letang, that was a little bit later pick, obviously, you know, then you have a team that went on and won the Stanley Cup and has competed for a couple of cups. So, you know, that's one formula. There's just a lot of different ways to build a team. There's a lot of different roads to go. And, you know, the NHL clearly has taken steps to make it less advantageous to finish last or second to last or anything like that. And I think those are good changes for the game.
Brian Lawton joins us. Brian, being a former GM, I think it was Ken Holland who said it recently. He goes, hey, everybody makes mistakes, but it's how you fix those mistakes afterwards. And how much when you make a wrong draft pick, let's say, or you make a trade and you realize, okay, man, this just wasn't the right trade. How patient do you have to be to not try to fix it right away?
Well, in today's game, you got to be incredibly patient, but, you know, at the same time, you don't want to be ignorant or blind to the mistakes. And the guys that realize them quickly and generally end up admitting them and don't try to shove them under the rug, don't try to get blood from a rock, but, you know, fix a mistake that they've identified. Those are the guys that are doing well, you know, and even, you know, if you look at David Poile, you know, in Nashville, they've taken a stab at trying a lot of different things over the last few years. And, you know, when it hasn't worked out, they've been very quick to react. And I think it's what's led to, you know, the part of the great season they're having this year.
You know, and it's funny because, you know, those moves and, you know, like the Edmonton Oilers, for instance, I thought they made a great trade getting David Perron for Magnus Pyarvi. But then 18 months later, to me, I think they kind of negated it by going back to the well again with more futures. And, you know, everybody can say how deep the 2015 draft is, but, you know, is that pick, whatever it is, 20 to 30, you know, going to really help your team for another 4 years? Probably not.
No, I mean, those are tough decisions. I think that, you know, Edmonton just made a decision that it wasn't going to happen this year, and they turned the page, and, you know, they didn't feel, and only Craig knows why, but they didn't feel that maybe David fit in with the personnel they had and or the personnel they have coming and or the personnel, not necessarily that they've drafted that they know, but the players that they think they'll be drafting. And that's a tough, you know, it's a tough job to manage that. That's Craig's job. And, you know, I continually say it with Edmonton because I've believed for quite a long time that the future is bright. But it's getting time to see that future. And I think that it's going to happen for them, and I'm hoping that it all coincides and comes together in kind of a beautiful way with a new building, you know, new excitement. And if the Oilers were fortunate enough to add one of those top two centermen this year, I think that'd be amazing for the franchise. Having seen Noah Hanifin play lately, I think he'd be an amazing acquisition for them as well at the number three slot. So I think they're in a really good spot. It's just a matter of pulling it all together.
And, you know, they've got to improve their back end and goaltending. And that's got, like, goaltending's got to be the hardest position to improve on your team because, you know, there's only a limited amount of those guys out there that teams are even willing to. Like Anaheim right now, they've got two great ones. If you're the Anaheim general manager, would you even contemplate it? Would you say, no, I got to see more from that position. I got to see more from both of them, and I might as well wait a whole other season. What would you do?
Well, I think Bob Murray's been very patient. He's done an excellent job in Anaheim. But ultimately, it comes down to your philosophy as a manager as to what, you know, what drives your goaltending. Is it a great goaltender? If we put Carey Price in Edmonton, would all their problems be solved? That's a question that people should think long and hard about. For me, it's more about, you know, the coaching staff, the system you're employing, the players that are carrying it out, and particularly your blue line. I think if the Edmonton Oilers, you know, were able to really rebuild their blue line, you know, the way that Craig McTavish is so familiar with, having been, you know, such an incredible defensive player his whole career, if they could build it up to that level, then I think their goaltending will be fine and we'll hear a lot less about it. Even if we look back at Devan Dubnyk, who is one guy that, you know, obviously it didn't work out for him in Edmonton, but he really had some pretty good numbers. I remember when he did, you know, the deal that paid him roughly $2.8, $3 million, whatever it was, and comparing him to Corey Schneider at the time, and they were very similar in their numbers. And when you look at the different teams they were playing on, I don't think that Devan necessarily got the credit that he deserved. It wasn't a goaltending problem. It's a fixing the rest of your team. It's getting your coaching where it should be, getting your players to buy into a defensive system, And then all of a sudden you don't have to have as much discussion about your goaltender. He can't be terrible, but I think you can get by with less than greatness and still be a really strong team in the National Hockey League, is what I'm trying to say, if you build that blue line, if you get the right coaching staff in there.
The interview process for a coach, Brian, you've been through it, hiring a coach. How many guys would you, if you had a vacancy, how many coaches would you want to interview for that job? Like, how many, like, what's, is there a right number, three or four? Is some numbers too many? Like, what do you think's the right number to interview for a vacant head coaching job?
3 to 4 for me is the right number. You don't need to turn it into a circus, but I think you want to find people that have different traits. And then you want to bring them in and you want to compare and see who you believe is the right fit. At the end of the day, I really think it's, you know, we see a lot of people skipping the process, in my opinion. I think that's one of the weaknesses in the National Hockey League, is people don't do the due diligence. They don't take the time. You see people that get hired more off of reputation, buddy system, things like that. And ultimately, the only loser is the organization. It's not the way to conduct business, but it's work to interview people. It's time and effort and organization just to arrange to get people in and to spend time with them. It's not easy, but if someone were asking me in the middle of the night, I would say 3 or 4 every time.
Yeah, and when you go through that process and you interview the guys, and you mention you want ones with different skill set, I'm assuming you could probably glean a lot of information about them, about your organization, because they're probably usually, like, when a coach comes in and sits down with you, GM for that vacancy job, he's got to come in kind of with a game plan of what he would do if he got the job, correct?
Yeah, I mean, everybody is figuring out now. Traditionally in the National Hockey League, people were just hired on past reputation, and, you know, they weren't doing as much preparation work as a guy like Bill Peters did this past summer to get the job in Carolina. You know, I've been involved in the National Hockey League for a very long time, but also in business for a very long time, and it's much more standard to have people come in prepared rather than come in and expect to get, you know, the type of jobs that a National Hockey League coach is. To expect to get a job like that, you know, in my opinion, I would not consider very many people without them putting in, you know, a good 50 hours preparation. And I know a guy like Dave Tippett, who's a very good friend of mine, as is Joel Quenneville, and I know these guys. And I don't care if I were running a team, I would want them to be prepared. And the good news is, they would both show up incredibly prepared. That's why they are top coaches in the National Hockey League.
Now, you had fired a coach during the season. How different is the process when you fire a guy during the year to find his replacement, when a lot of the other guys, you know, obviously have jobs, compared to, you know, at the end of the season when the season's over and, you know, you've got a few months to see what happens?
Well, you don't have the options and you don't have the luxury of time on your side. You know, became the general manager in Tampa essentially in the middle of the summer. The coach was actually already hired at that time. It was Barry Melrose. I had a meeting with Barry, you know, in the summer. And, you know, we got a chance. That was the first time we really had a chance to sit down. And I was probably a little bit concerned at that time, just, you know, with my first brush with, you know, listening to his philosophies and everything. It didn't necessarily jive with what my vision was for the team. And, you know, sure enough, about 16 games into the season, you know, we ended up going in a different direction. And at that time, it wasn't a great time that early in the year to be looking for a new coach. You really limited your options if you're doing things that way. Sometimes it happens. But you just don't have the candidate pool. You don't have the luxury of time to go out and really do your due diligence and for people to come in and spend their time. So, you know, in a perfect world, you never want to be replacing your coach in the middle of the season.
Yeah. Obviously, it's tough because you just, the options are limited. If, let's put you for fun, if you were the GM of the Oilers and coaches came to you, what do you think's the one thing most necessary for the next head coach of the Edmonton Oilers in his game plan? What's it got to be?
You know, for me, the difference for coaching today, having played in the 80s and 90s, is that players are not nearly as intimidated and coaches don't rule the roost nearly the way they used to. Players know that they're much more stable in their positions. And, you know, coaching by fear is a lot less effective today than it was 20 years ago in the National Hockey League. So for me, it's the guys that are communicators that can relate and then can convince, you know, young men to buy in what they're selling. And there's lots of different ways to win in the National Hockey League with coaches. But ultimately, the players have to believe in your coach. They have to believe that he's going to do everything in his power to prepare the players to further their careers. And that's not an easy thing to do in today's game. But the guys that, you know, the guys that I'm talking about, the Dave Tippetts, the Joel Quenvilles, the Mike Babcocks, you know, and there's many of them in the National Hockey League. There's many tremendous coaches. They all have those common traits. The players buy into what they're doing. The players believe that these guys can make them better. And that's why they march to their tune. And those are the guys that are having success year in and year out. So communication, accountability, those are at the top of the list. As far as systems, there's not as many secrets as there used to be. And with the advent of increased technology and video in particular, it's not rocket science now, but getting people to buy in and perform on a nightly basis, that's not an easy challenge for anybody.
Brian, always insightful stuff, man. Great to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jason. Great to catch up with you.